And it looks like everyone can hear us, so thank you so much. All right, so we'll just get right into it here. We actually have the wrong date on here, so please disregard today is June 18th. But you are joining us today for an application walkthrough for the Fulbright Scholar in Residence Program. So this is geared towards U.S. institutions who are looking to host a visiting scholar on their campuses. We'll be getting into all the nitty-gritty of that in a little bit, but for now I just want us to introduce ourselves. My name is Keely Atwater. I'm a placement advisor here at IIE, the Institute of International Education. So I help provide placement services, application advising, a few things for the Scholar in Residence program. And then I'm also joined by my colleague, Sarah Causer, down in Houston. I'll have her introduce herself too.
Hi everyone, good to be here. Glad to see everyone who has joined in.
Thanks, Sarah. And then we'll also be joined in a little bit by David Levin. I think that he might be coming on a few minutes late, so we'll welcome him. We'll have him introduce himself as soon as he's able to log in. But for now, we'll just move right ahead and into the presentation overview. And Sarah, I'll hand it off to you.
Perfect. Well, hi everyone again. My name is Sarah Causer. For today's overview, we're going to provide a very brief introduction to the program. As a few of you, I see some familiar names have been with us since the start of the opening in March. We have had specific webinars geared to specific institution types, such as minority-serving institutions, community colleges, rural colleges, so on and so forth. So you can feel free to listen to any of those archives for a more thorough overview of the program. But so today we're going to do a quick overview of the program, and then I will pass the reins back to Kaylee, who will actually take us through the online application system so you can use this resource as a tool as you are submitting your applications online. And then we'll follow it up with a few different other tools and resources that are available to you throughout the duration of the application process, along with some other opportunities. And then we'll end it with a quick Q&A in case anyone has further follow-up questions. So, as I did say, we'll do a quick overview. As many of you might have noticed on the first screen, we do have a new logo and a whole new look to the program that we are presenting on. We're very excited about that. At the heart of the program and why we did rebrand was to really center our brand around our true goals and aims of the program, which is really to connect people to other people, to other nations, and to other countries. So really at the heart of the program is really connecting people. So in partnership with 160 countries worldwide, Fulbright does offer opportunities for faculty, administrators, artists, journalists, lawyers, and other professionals from all backgrounds the opportunity to study, teach, or conduct research overseas, as well as to bring those same type of background of people to the United States. One of the opportunities that we're talking about today is a scholar in residence program and how you can utilize this program to bring a specific applicant to your institution to teach. The mission really is to foster that mutual understanding between nations, advance knowledge across communities, and improve lives around the world. As a brief kind of history of the program itself was started in 1946 by Congress. It is the United States government's flagship international education and cultural exchange program, and we're very proud to still be that primary flagship program out there. The program itself is sponsored by the U.S. Department of State, with funding provided by the U.S. government, and it is administered by the Institute of International Education. We're very glad to continue with this partnership. And I think with the next slide, if David, are you on, by the way? You might not be. Okay. We'll keep going. We'll bring David in if he has anything else to follow up. But one of the things that we always want to highlight on our program is that diversity and inclusion is always at the forefront of our program, that the program itself looks at diversity in the broadest sense, irregardless of race, color, national origin, sex, age, religion, geographical location, socioeconomical status, disability, sexual orientation, or gender identity. We're constantly trying to make sure that we are making sure that this program is open to anyone and everyone who wants to participate. Another thing that we always like to highlight is these programs are also open to veterans of the armed forces. So if anyone is coming from those backgrounds, we constantly want to make sure that they are also eligible and know that they can apply for this program. Awesome. So the last slide that I do have to go over is really the Scholar in Residence program as a whole. So the brief kind of overview that we want to provide is to let you know that this program allows you as a U.S. institution to bring scholars and professionals from abroad to your campus. What we're really looking for in campuses are institutions that do not primarily have the opportunity to host such types of scholars. So the types of institutions that we're really trying to engage with are really kind of underserved within the program. They could be minority-serving institutions, community colleges, small liberal arts, rural colleges, so on and so forth. So that's really who we're trying to target with these programs. Thank you for forwarding the slide. Moving back, as we just did, is we're really seeking for institutions who really wish to get further involved with the program to give them an opportunity to host one of these scholars from overseas. They can either name the scholar that you want to bring to your campus, or you can request recruitment from a certain country or countries in the same region to teach in a specific discipline. These scholars primarily teach at the undergraduate level for either a semester or a full academic year, and then they also provide cross-cultural and international perspectives to your wider campus community. So these scholars tend to be kind of all-stars on their campus as opposed to some of the other programs where they might just be housed in a specific department researching in their office or the library kind of day in and day out. These scholars tend to be involved not only in the classrooms that they're teaching but within their department and sometimes across different departments. They may have two courses in two different departments, and then they're working closely with both of those departments. They might be leading cultural topics across the campus. They may be involved with student organization groups and serving as an advisor of an international club or a language club. So these scholars tend to be very widely recognized on their campuses. As I said earlier, the application is made by the interested U.S. institution. You're applying for a semester or full academic year. You tell us what you're looking for on your campus, and we'll try and make that work. And then the main deadline that we do have is annual on November 1st. And this used to be an earlier deadline, but we did move it back by 2 weeks to allow you more time as you get back to the campus on fall to really pull together these applications. But that deadline is November 1st. We'll talk about an earlier deadline that we do have that allows you to submit a draft proposal ahead of this national deadline. But again, that will come a little bit further in the application. And it's just to allow us to give you critical feedback before you finally hit that submit button. If we do not get to any of your questions today or perhaps other questions pop up, please feel free to email us at sir@iie.org and we'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Great, and I think with that, we can step into the application walkthrough. So if anyone has been attending our webinar series this spring and in the summer, you may have seen that we've talked about the various application components and the uploaded materials, but we've also really wanted to feature previous hosts or current hosts of scholars and sometimes also the scholars. So if you haven't been able to attend those, Sarah will talk about this later. I think we have a listing of all of the webinars that we've held. You're able to view them afterwards. I encourage you to do that just because the hosts can help to give a really good idea of what goes into filling out an application, what goes into working with the different departments at your institutions, what goes into working with the community at a larger scale, and kind of everything like that. So definitely encourage you to do that. I also will say that we'll be showing this later, but we will have, I think, two more webinars in this round, and they'll almost act as office hours. So that will be, we'll have a more brief presentation, and then we'll just be opening it up to questions. So you can come with your own questions, you can come to hear what other people are asking about, everything like that. Okay. So, and please bear with me with the technical part of this. I think I have everything ready here. Okay, so one of the main places that you'll be wanting to go is the CIS.org website. I'll even start from that homepage to show you how to reach this page where we are now. So what you want to do, and again, there are links, there's clickable links throughout the webinar if you're viewing it later. So you, under the programs, you're a U.S. institution. And then you want to call in residence. As a little teaser, I know that Sarah will be talking about the outreach lecturing fund later, so if you're following along right now and clicking around, you can take a look now. But we want scholar in residence here. So there is a lot of information, some of which you've already seen in these slides here. I really encourage you to take a look. Here's the listing of webinars. Here's the archived webinars that we've already seen. And then just really click around. Get a feel for what the process is for this application, what people have done successfully, everything like that. But what I want to look at now, of course, is this application tab. Again, many wonderful resources. But here, what I like to have open, and I have this favorited on my personal laptop, this application guidelines link, which I already have open up here, and then the slate application. And this I already have open over here too. So if you click this button, then it will take you to this page here. And if you have completed a scholar residence application in a previous round, then you'll see that this looks a little bit different than it has in the past. So this is just a new application system, and it's called Slate. And it's great, it's really easy to use. You'll be seeing it in a minute. You'll see that the format has changed very slightly from previous years, but the content itself remains the same, which again, you'll be seeing. So for first-time users, you can click Create an Account, and you'll just have to enter, I think, first name, last name, email, and birth date, and then it will send you a PIN to your email, which you'll have to input in here in order to access your application. But what I'm going to do is I click this one here, since I'm a returning user, and it brings me to this page. Okay. So what I have here is my Kaylee Test. My last name is Test. I'm going to click Start New Application. And because I opened it from this Scholar in Residence page, this is what it's allowing me to create an application for. So I'll click Create Application. Great. Just gives me a little bit of detail so I can open the application. And I actually, as soon as I clicked open an application, I actually just got an automatic email from the system to my personal inbox that I can see here just telling me that I started an application and what the link is and all of that kind of thing. So we do have a question here because, again, this is only for U.S. institutions to apply. So you need to say that, yes, you are an institution of higher education. That's my name. Test, so I'll click continue. And throughout, you'll be seeing they'll direct you to FIRIE.org. And again, our team is on the other end of that, happy to answer questions that you might have along the way. So I'll click continue. And now this is where we get into all of the different sections of it. So you'll see that opened up a few sections along the left-hand side here. So you'll see that these first four here, institutional information down to scholar profile, these are shorter application sections. This is where you're really just entering text using dropdowns, and then a little bit later here in supporting documentation, you'll actually be uploading a number of documents. And again, I'll be getting into all of this. What we'd like to say is that you should really, I mean, it's great that you're attending this webinar and getting a feel for it here, but it's really great for you to actually go and start an application, get a feel for it yourself, send it to your colleagues that you're also working on the proposal with, make sure that they're in there and understanding what needs to go into the application. You're welcome to do it right now, too, as we're going into it. If you want to just kind of click around with me, you're welcome to. So you'll see here on this first section of the application, that we are asking, is this a joint proposal with another U.S. institution? Before I get too far into it, I'm actually going to jump back to these application guidelines I'm sorry to skip over a little bit. So from this page, if I had clicked this here, then you can go and view the application guidelines here. This document does have a lot of text, but it is a wonderful, wonderful resource. And if you email us, ask us questions about the application, a lot of the times we'll actually be able to point to this and say, all right, well, if you look at it this way, if you read the application guidelines and kind of frame it in this sense, then this might be able to help answer your question and everything like that. So again, this document also helps to break down every single section. Now I will skip back. Okay, so the program does allow for joint proposals. If you do apply for joint proposals, then there are different page amounts that you'll be able to upload when we get later on into the upload section. So I'll talk about that. If you click yes, then it will double the amount of institutional information that you're inputting throughout. And if you click no, then it will just remain the same and you'll only be entering one institution's information. So if you're ever confused as to why you're seeing multiple contact requests, all that kind of thing, then you might want to just double check the section here. So I'm going to keep it a no. And now let's just see, we take a look here. It actually will search for your institution for you if you're going in this. I'm going to keep a lot of this blank just so as not to confuse the system with my test application. And this is really just preliminary information, just asking almost biographical information about your institution. And if you've been into one of those priority categories that Sarah has mentioned, as you're going through it, make sure that you click continue at the bottom. And then if you see it, it takes you into the next section. You'll also see, so after that more general information that you're inputting here, in this institutional contact, they're asking you to put in the information or the contact information for two people on campus. One is the responsible administrative official up here. So that is someone who more or less is signing off on saying, yes, we are willing and able and approve of hosting a scholar in residence on our campus. And then down here, you'll see that there's also a principal contact for academic arrangements. So this person is responsible for maybe working with the scholar to arrange meetings with faculty and arranging course offerings, everything like that. We have found that sometimes these are the same people, and that's completely fine. So everyone works it a little bit differently. We know that all the institutions have different needs. So for example, there might be one person who's the main contact for the scholar for everything, or you might be pulling in different contacts from different departments or colleges who will serve as that scholar residence contact over on campus. And then if you just said that you were doing a joint proposal, it will just have a second set of this on this page. And I'll click continue at the bottom. And here we have the program information. So again, we're still in that text box and drop-down section that's pretty quick to input information. So right now, you'll see that we are working pretty far in advance. So the current application cycle that's open is actually for 2020 and 2021, which I know can be hard to wrap our heads around. So here you'll just be inputting the dates that the scholar would be expected on campus. So this is where we're seeing if you would like to host a scholar, propose to host a scholar for one semester versus a full academic year. Here also, you are able to just input basic information about financial support here, but I think we'll be getting into this a little bit more into those upload sections coming up next. And then it just asks for some more general information about your institution, if you've previously hosted a scholar in residence. And then there's also the proposal summary. So this really helps to give our reviewers a snapshot as to what your program entails and what you're proposing. So it's really helpful if you use this section to highlight all major proposal pieces. And one more note before I keep going is that it is seeing these little asterisks throughout. That means that it's a required application question. So we're seeing it here, not necessarily here, but really any information that you're able to input in here for the reviewers to take a look at and discuss the better. Okay, so now we're going to move down here to continue. Okay, so now...
Hello, Kaylee. This is David.
Oh, good. Hi, David. Thank you so much. I'm glad you're able to join.
I apologize for being late.
No, it's no problem. So we gave everyone a heads up that you'd be joining. Do you mind introducing yourself quickly? I know it's a little late, but...
Sure. My name is David Levin, and I'm the diversity coordinator, and I work on Fulbright within the Bureau of Education and Cultural Affairs at the State Department. We're the overall sponsor for Fulbright, and happy to be with you for this Scholar Residence webinar.
All right. Thank you so much, David. And what I may do is, after we're done with the walkthrough here, just ask you to talk a little bit about program benefits that you've seen. So we can jump into that after, I think.
Sure.
All right. Thank you much. Okay, so looking back at this here, we have the scholar profile section. So again, I know that this is still where it's just text boxes and drop downs. I promise we'll get into the upload section in a minute. But what we actually allow for here is two different tracks. So you can either name a scholar or ask for recruitment of a scholar. If you have questions about all of these different pieces, I'd either encourage you to take a look at the application guidelines again, watch one of the webinars, or reach out to us, since I know that I am just kind of skipping through the application itself. But if you do have questions about the individual pieces, you're more than welcome to reach out to us. So for naming a scholar, if you say, yes, I am asking for a specific scholar, it's just asking for more general information about the person that you're requesting, where they're from, English proficiency, if they've participated in a Fulbright grant previously, and you can actually include the information for more than one scholar. So there should be, there's room for you to enter the information of two separate scholars here. Again, this does point us to the Scholar in Residence application guidelines to see who the participating countries are, so we know where that information is. And if we click no, then that means that you are requesting a specific scholar, or I'm sorry, you are requesting a recruitment of a scholar. If you go this route, then you are able to select one region and then two countries within that region. And then you can proceed with that. If you don't see a country that you're interested in on our list, then you're definitely welcome to reach out to us to discuss. And then in the proposal itself, which we'll be getting into with these uploads, you'll actually be including more information about the type of scholar that you would like for us to recruit. So when you're doing that, we'll actually use those details that you provide to reach out to our colleagues abroad and see if they're able to recruit a scholar within that discipline or specialization that you're requesting. So we really do just ask that you outline the credentials of the scholar that would meet the needs of your proposal, if they have a certain amount of teaching experience that they need in order to teach on your campus, really anything like that. So again, if you click yes, then you're inputting specific scholar or scholars information. And if you click no, then you're asking for scholar recruitment. Okay, so let's just click yes here. So yes, I am naming a scholar that I would like to host on my campus. Go down here and I'll click continue. Okay. And now we are getting into this upload section here. So this is everything that I was talking about before. So here, okay, so all of this is technically under supporting documentation. So you'll see that there are two main sections of the proposal. There's the institution profile up here, and then there's the proposed program and financial support here. So we like to refer to them as part one and part two if you've seen our webinars before. So this institution profile section, this is if you are applying as a single institution, so we talked about you can be single or joint. For the single, this can be 4 to 5 pages or 7 to 8 pages if you're joint, because double the institution, double the number of pages. You'll see, I'd say to keep in mind that the reviewers may or may not know your institution. So this section here is really key to giving them a better idea of your institution and who you are. On the application guidelines and on the webinars, we actually list, and I'll open it up here for everyone. So we go on page 7. Okay, so you're actually seeing the individual items that we're looking for and that the reviewers are looking for in the section of the application. I'm sorry, my mouse is being a little wacky here. It's not letting me move as well. So the things that you'll include in this institution profile section include just general information, which are all listed on the screen here. And what we always recommend, and you'll hear us say again and again, is that we find that it's really helpful to just break these pages down by section. So just slotting in a few paragraphs under mission, under academic offerings, under community resources, just along down the line, because that not only helps to make sure that you're kind of ticking all of the boxes of these application guidelines, but you're also making sure that you're meeting the expectations of the reviewers down the line too if they're looking at these applications. So what we really want to see is how your institution is set up and what you have in place, and also what you might not have in place and that a scholar in residence could possibly help with or fill a gap in. This is where you're also indicating your institution's short and long-term goals and objectives. So what are you hoping to gain through internationalizing your campus and efforts? How specifically would hosting a scholar in residence fit into these goals? David, I don't have anything to add about this first part of the narrative proposal and what you've seen done before in this section.
I think just make your narrative clear in terms of, not only what you're looking for in terms of a scholar, but also in terms of giving us a sense of your needs as an institution, particularly in terms of internationalization, what your thoughts are about that, short term and long term, and how this sort of fits. We hope in some way seamlessly in terms of this scholar coming to campus and helping you internationalize in a whole variety of ways. Based on what you think your needs are. And that's sort of the beauty of this program is the blueprint is really up to you to design in terms of what you want your scholar to do more specifically than, yes, they'll teach, yes, they'll do curriculum assistance, yes, they'll engage across campus. Think creatively about how you propose to do that and how that really fits with your objectives. And this is your chance to really tell us what you want from that scholar and how that's going to fit your campus initiative and campus effort.
Mm-hmm. And you'll definitely see that a lot of the different pieces of this proposal really work together and are intertwined. So you might be mentioning one initiative in a different section also, and that's completely fine. Just making sure that you're really highlighting your strengths and even areas of growth, so weaknesses. So really everything that you want to highlight for the reviewers to see is definitely included here. Okay, so then we'll actually move on. I'll show you over in the application itself. So that was the institution profile. Again, that was that 4 to 5 or 7 to 8. Now we're moving on to the actual proposed program and financial support itself. So this is really the main essence of the application, as you'll see from our slightly text heavy explanations that are very, very helpful here. So this is where you're really trying to show what the Scholar in Residence program is going to accomplish for you. So let's just even start at the top of this here. Okay, so we have the oversight section here. So that is where you're addressing who on campus will be responsible and for what during this whole visit. So you already had identified two different contacts in the first part of the application. So up here, an institutional contact, you had listed that administrative official and also that faculty associate for academic arrangements. So you had kind of put in the more basic information here, but in this upload section, in the program proposal part, you can actually give more information and more background about those individuals and what they'll be doing for the scholar on campus. So I mentioned this before, but we see this oversight section take various forms. So there might be just a few faculty or staff. There could also be a whole right steering committee that pulls in staff from different departments and backgrounds. And we know that all of this is dependent on your institution. So what we really want to see is what thought has been put into the scholars program on campus and that everyone's going to be set up for success. And we're moving on to the academic program of the scholars. So again, this is still within that one main upload, that uploaded document. So here in the academic program of the scholar, you talk about what qualifications or background the scholar should have to meet the proposal's needs. And then also jump into the need for the courses themselves. So this is where you can really highlight how a named scholar might fit into the needs of your proposal, and it's also where you can talk about what thought you've put into a potential recruited scholar and how they might fit into the needs of your proposal too. So we do often get a question about how many courses a scholar might teach on campus, and we see it on average about two per semester. So sometimes the scholar might be teaching an RA design course and just providing international insight into it. And other times they might be creating an entirely new course. So just really highlighting this part of it and what needs to go into the scholar's preparation and success on campus. So highlighting that so that reviewers can understand the amount of preparation that needs to go into completing those activities on campus. Again, I'd say, and I be sure that you discuss how the scholar and residents will interact all across campus, even across the community, to show that you've really thought through how to maximize the top scholar's time and presence in your whole community. Okay. I'll kind of skip around here so that I can make sure we have time for questions. This one piece here, professional enrichment. So we've talked about how this is a institutionally driven application, but we of course want to see where there's potential for scholars' individual growth. So if you plan to include the scholar in faculty meetings or sending them to conferences or asking them to join in certain meetings or orientations, you could put that in this section here. And then also, let's go down to financial support. So if you remember from this section of the application up here when we were just putting in the text or drop-downs, you had put in just the amounts of cost share that you'd be able to provide. So down here in the supporting documentation, this is where you're able to actually dive deeper into and expand on what areas of cost share you're able to provide. So we say that cost share is encouraged. Let me go back into the guidelines here to show you. So cost share is encouraged. And institutions are really asked to think creatively of ways that they can provide it. But cost share is not required. It won't make or break an application. You won't be disqualified. What we do see is that it could take the form of salary supplement, but also in-kind support. So we've seen institutions offer a meal plan on campus, or allow them to audit classes, or the dependents to audit classes, or deferring the cost of housing, things like that. So we ask you to provide estimates as to what those intense goods are valued at, and then you really should, we ask that you provide more insight in this section so that, again, we can see what thought has been put into your proposal and your application. David, did you have anything to add to that section about financial support?
No, I think I just reiterate, Kelly, what you said about sort of people thinking creatively about how they could do this, whether it's cash, whether it's in-kind support. You know, in a given year, we'll see everything from $0 to $50,000, which is maybe surprising, but that's what we've seen typically. One thing I would say for those of you that are actually minority-serving institutions, you may be getting money through the Department of Education under Title III or Title V, and perhaps think about that as one funding stream that lets you provide funding for the scholar in residence, whether it's cash or whether it's buying some kind of in-kind support for the grantee. We're seeing an increased number of schools look to their Title III or their Title V money as a way of supporting the SIR.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. And just really leveraging whatever is available to you. So, again, you can just put more basic information in that first section, but really anything that you can include all pieces of what you're looking at and what you're researching as you're going through this proposal, everything that you can put in this uploaded section here is great and really helpful for reviewers. But, yeah, thank you so much, David. Okay, so these two up here, these are really the two main sections of this whole application, I'd say. So the first one here is just, again, that more general information about your institution and your needs as a whole and how an SIR would fit into it. And then down here, you're actually breaking out what you're proposing, what the program would be for the scholar, what kind of support is available, what they'd be doing, everything like that. So really just using these application guidelines and the webinars is wonderful. Okay, so now we are moving on to this next section here. So sample syllabi or course outlines, yet another upload section. What we'd like to see here are what the proposed courses entail, just to really get a sense of what the courses or courses is about. So if you're naming a specific scholar, you might have insight into what that particular scholar will be able to teach, and you'll be able to craft this sample syllabi section in a way that will enhance that scholar's cultural perspective. So that's great. As I've been saying throughout, really anything that you can do to strengthen your proposal as a whole, do it. So you'll be seeing all of this coming together hopefully in the coming months, and we're looking forward to seeing that. And one note about this is that we understand that things change. So this really is a sample syllabi, and it's you're not necessarily locking this in stone and saying, yes, this is the exact course that we need a scholar to teach, because we know that there is need for flexibility on the scholar's and on your end also. Okay. This next section here, so if you remember, when I was in the scholar profile, I had said that, yes, I named the scholar that I would like to host on campus. So because I did that, in the supporting documentation section, it is asking me to upload a CV and letters of recommendation for that specific scholar. One of those letters of recommendation should be able to talk about the teaching capabilities of the scholar, because, again, the primary activity of the scholar is undergraduate teaching. If you said that you wanted to recruit a scholar or work with us to recruit a scholar, then this section would disappear. So, again, just an explanation for you as you're going through it. If you say, well, now where did that go? That might be the reason why. And if you have questions about it, I'm happy to help you with it. Okay. Then down here, we have the letters of support. So these letters of support would directly relate to your institution and what you're applying to do and pull in all the pieces of the proposal. So at a minimum, this should include a letter from the administrative official. there is no maximum. So as I'm talking about this, I'm kind of combining these last two sections here that you see. So there's no maximum. You can seek out letters from different departments across your institutions, from neighboring institutions, from the high schools, Rotary clubs, everything. So if you are arranging community outreach and activities, if you include a letter of support here, it's not setting it in stone and saying, this is exactly what this community group is going to do with this scholar. What you're really doing is just showcasing the excitement of the idea of having a scholar on your campus and in your larger community. And then on the other side of that, this can also grow once the scholar arrives, so you're not bound only to the letters of support that you included in this part of the application here. And again, as we've been saying, we understand that a lot of this can change, so happy to answer questions, but we know that as you move through the process, even you might need to change certain pieces that you've already uploaded. Okay, so just to reiterate some of this, these were the more text information and more biographical information, and then this is really the essence of the application, the supporting documentation. So we're going to go to the bottom of the screen and click continue here, and it's asking for your signature. And I'm not going to click confirm, I'm just going to click over on review and see what happens. And as can be expected, because I was not entering any information through this webinar, that it's telling me that I'm missing a lot of information. So any of those items that had asterisks throughout, make sure that you click back and say, oh, right, I missed this and this, and that should hopefully help to guide your review of everything also. You'll also be able to access a PDF version of the application, and I'd encourage you to save all of that too. And that will also pull in any of those uploaded materials in the supporting documentation section that we were looking at. Okay. I am going to shift back into our PowerPoint here. And I think we do have some questions coming in, so I promise I will go quickly through this last portion, and then we can get to those. Okay. So after you actually click submit on your application, what happens next? So you might be curious as to what that external review committee is looking for during review. So what we say to that, and you can see information about the timeline, I think in this webinar and in a few slides, but also on the website, there's a timeline tab that you can click and take a look at what your application goes through in the next steps. But this section here is the review criteria, so as what the external review committee is looking for during their discussion and during their review of your applications. So just really making sure that all of the pieces of your application and your proposal are working together. And to just really give them a picture of what you're hoping to accomplish through hosting a scholar in residence. So these are your short-term goals, these are long-term, and this is how hosting a scholar in residence would contribute specifically to these goals. So we did really discuss most of these when we were running through the application walkthrough, but just honing in on a few pieces here, you'll want to think through if the proposal is feasible within the time period. So if you're listing a large number of courses that a scholar should be creating and teaching within one single semester, that might be a red flag for the reviewers. Also, they'll be not sure if a scholar could feasibly complete those activities within that time period. Then also expanding as much as possible on the types of community outreach and engagement. So really creating a network across the institution. Then also taking the time to think through sustainability. So are other professors sitting in and learning about what the scholar residence is teaching and help to sustain it? And then Dita, this is where I wanted to hand it over to you to talk maybe about program benefits that you've seen through the years or I know that we all feel passionate about this program because it's wonderful to work with. So, yeah, did you have any insights at this point, Art?
Sure. Just to say, and maybe you've said this already, in which case I apologize, I think this is really unique among Fulbright programs because typically, as you may know, with Fulbright, it's generally an individual grant to an American student, American scholar who's going abroad, or a scholar or student from abroad coming to the United States. In this case, it's an institutional-driven proposal, and while you know we clearly want the scholar to benefit from this experience, the purpose of this really is more how is this benefiting you as an institution and your internationalization efforts. So I think from that standpoint, it makes this program unique among sort of the Fulbright menu of programs. And then secondly, because of the focus of the program, we're saying and this has been in place for many years, we're giving preference to institutions that are typically less engaged in hosting scholars and or schools that serve minority audiences. And I'm sure that means many of you. We think the program is so valuable and the benefits are so good. We think it's a great program that helps us promote the whole concept of diversity within Fulbright. This is really a great way for you to take advantage of that, and perhaps the kind of Fulbright program that you know fits your institution, as opposed to perhaps the program for graduate students or for incoming faculty doing research may not necessarily fit your the kinds of things you're doing on campus or the kinds of resources that you have for those scholars or those students. This is a way for you as an institution to get engaged in the world of Fulbright. And we're excited about that. And I think the schools that do this, if any indication is whether this works, is we see lots of schools coming back a couple years later, 3 years later, saying, hey, this was great. We want to do this again. So we think that's a good testament. But like I said, we think this is really a great program, and really we try to craft it in a way that helps really meet your needs.
Yeah, thanks, David. And one thing that Sarah had mentioned earlier is that this is definitely unique among Fulbright programs because these scholars are all over. They hearing the stories from the hosts and also from the scholars about what they were engaged with is just fascinating. So wonderful for us to hear. So I definitely recommend that you have a listen to some of the webinars just to hear what kind of groups they got involved with, or like dinners or meetings, and they just are really all over, and it's just great here. Okay. I am going to jump into the next section here, and I think Sarah, going back to you, if you could talk about the review process and the timeline.
Yeah, of course. So earlier in this presentation, I mentioned that you do have that opportunity to submit draft proposals. I know we were talking about that throughout. So the first date that I want to remind everyone is that as of October 1st, 2019, that is our cutoff date for draft proposals. And what I mean by that is you can submit via email a copy of your proposal to us. We'll take a look at it and offer you critical feedback on those proposals before you hit that final submit button. So with the final submit button, with the Slate application online, the due date is November 1st of this year for the 2020-2021 academic year. In November, our team will conduct a technical review for completeness of your application. We just want to make sure everything was submitted successfully. That way, as your application does enter the review process with that external review committee, they're seeing the application as it should look. In December, we do host that external review committee. It's made up of past hosts for this program. They will review each of the applications and ultimately be making decisions on who would be awarded in the 2020-2021 academic year. In January, you will be notified of the review outcomes. We try and have it as quick of a turnaround as possible because following that January notification, there's a lot of moving pieces going on. So following that notification, as you are notified, ECA and the J. William Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board review that slate of recommended institutions and proposals. While they're reviewing that and making sure, you know, all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted, IIE, CIEF, will confirm the institutional funding that everything is good in our books according to what has been proposed by you as the institution and what needs to be provided on top of that. So while we're all doing that here on the U.S. side of things, for everyone that has been approved, we will send those proposals overseas to the posts and commissions. So in-country, if you have proposed that you would like a scholar recruited, the countries overseas will actually work on recruiting a scholar that meets those criteria that you set forth in your proposal. On the other side, if you did list and name that scholar that you wish to come to your institution, again, those countries will work with the host campus to review those nominations and make sure that that scholar can, in fact, accept that award and come to your institution. Now, for the terrible example of if you do name a scholar and they, for some reason, cannot accept that award in that academic year that you propose, there's a few different things that can happen. We can speak with you privately about potentially deferring an award, but what we could also do is conduct recruitment in country for another scholar that meets that requirement. So we'll work closely with you in case anything does occur. After that, anywhere from April to June, the scholars are sent their grant packets as they prepare to come to the United States and to your institutions to be greeted by you guys and kind of hit the ground running.
And I will interrupt before we move to the next slide here to say that although the draft proposal deadline is October 1st, the earlier the better. So we actually have received a few draft proposals, and that just means that we'll have a longer time to discuss any potential changes or questions that you might have now. Okay.
No, earlier the better is always a good alert, so thank you. So in this webinar, Kaylee really went over where to access a lot of these application resources, such as the website, the online application, how you can access it, the application guidelines that she walked you through, all of that. Again, she did walk you through, but as we finish this webinar, we will work to archive it and get it on our website. And each of these links will also be provided so you can have quick access there as well. But we just want to make sure that you are aware that there are resources out there for you. And then again, it's another reminder that draft proposals can be submitted anytime now up until October 1st. And then one of the last slides that we have on the FIR program before we jump into questions is we do have two more upcoming webinars that are later in the fall, just before the application deadline. So we have one ahead of that draft proposal deadline and then one between the draft proposal deadline and the final deadline because we want to make sure that we are as accessible to you guys as possible. But again, feel free to send us an email and set up any time to speak one-on-one, and we'd be happy to do so. And then the last slide that we have is just another opportunity, which I'm happy to speak privately with everyone about. But in addition to the opportunity that you listened to today, there are shorter opportunities for you to host current visiting scholars on their Fulbright grant in country. These scholars are actually here throughout the summer and into the early fall. I have about a list of 250 of these scholars. So if you do have summer programming, we do have additional funds that we'd be happy to have you guys involved in our Outreach Lecturing Fund Summer Fest. These opportunities allow you to request funding to bring these scholars to your campus to teach, to lecture for 2 to 6 days on their discipline topics, their research topics, as well as cultural topics. So if anyone has any questions, please email me at olf@iie.org. The list for the fall will go live in August, so if you're looking for someone for the fall or spring, again, reach out to me, and I'd be happy to connect you guys closer to August with that list. And with that, I think we are good to jump over to the Q&A portion, which we do have a good amount of questions that have come in. I've been asking for some clarification. Question for you specifically, David, is which title funds did you say some MSIs have been able to use? Could you expand on that again?
Sure. So through a program at the U.S. Department of Education called Developing Institutions, selected groups of minority-serving institutions receive funding from the Department of Education for, the definition is developing institutions, so it's as broad as you can imagine. If you're an HBCU or tribal college, you probably are getting Title III funding. If you're a Hispanic-serving institution, you're probably getting Title V funding. There's probably someone on your campus, in fact, who's the coordinator for Title III or Title V. And if, in fact, you know that your institution is getting those kinds of funds, you might want to talk with that office to see, is there a way that some of those funds could be used perhaps as a way of cost-sharing, whether it's cash or in-kind, for scholar-in-residence. We know typically those kinds of funds cannot really be used for sending a student overseas, for example, but they can be used for virtually anything that you're doing on campus, which would include hosting a Fulbright Scholar Residence. So it may be just a nice funding stream for you to take advantage of, you know, if you're looking for a way of doing some kind of cost share for this application.
Great. Thank you, David. And then it looks like we are getting a few questions about the number of courses that a scholar could teach. So some asking about the minimum, some about the maximum. So you heard me say during the presentation that we typically see about two courses taught per semester, but we have seen very creative things done also. So to this I say that it really does depend on the amount of preparation and live work needs to go into like creating these courses or running these courses or lecture series or whatever they are. So if it's, for example, co-teaching a course versus creating a new course and pioneering it for the first time on your campus, those are two very different activities that the scholar would be engaging in. So David, I don't know if you have anything to add about this one, too, about the number of courses and feasibility and all that type of thing.
I guess the only point I would add is when you're thinking about the number of classes, number of courses, sometimes a school would say we might do a little bit of a reduced load the first semester because it may take a bit of time just for your scholar to adjust to a new culture, a new country, a new teaching environment, a new institution. So sometimes what a school might do is they might say, okay, first semester we'll have them teach one class, one course, but maybe they'll do some guest lecturing perhaps in addition to that. And then maybe the second semester, after they become, you know, more adjusted to what's going on and feel more at home, maybe then you increase their load to maybe two courses that second semester. And that's you know, that's one option. We've seen a number of schools take that plan in mind.
Yeah, agreed. Thank you. Okay, so we are getting, I know, some questions about some more specific cases. So to those, I'd say if you can send us an email to the fir@iie.org email address up here, I'm kind of circling with my cursor, then we can answer those specifically. So I know that some of those will just need to be talking about offline a little bit more. So again, we're happy to do that. And then I think we're a little short on time, so we might close out in a moment. But before we do, Sarah, did you have anything to add, or David?
I just hope that we've piqued your interest and encouraged you, and we look forward to seeing your application.
Yes, I would agree. We're really excited to work with you guys. If you have any questions, again, please email us. We're so excited for all this interest in the program.
All right, and yeah, thank you so much, everyone. I do hope that this was helpful seeing me click through everything like this, and I'm happy to do that also on the phone. So I hope you all have a good afternoon, and thanks again.
Thank you very much, everybody.